As I came out, friends, I passed by those candles. I was wondering that if I ever lighted them, that I could play like Liberace. Last week, someone in the studio came with a camera, and a woman alongside of her said, "Don't shoot now. Wait until he starts talking, then shoot him." Listen, I must tell you a story. It's an ecumenical story. It's about a priest and a rabbi. They met in a train in Ireland. They were alone in the compartment. And the priest said to the rabbi, he says, "Rabbi, honestly, have you ever eaten pork in your life?" The rabbi said, "If you keep a secret, I will tell you. I ate pork once." "Now," said the rabbi, "let me ask you a question. Did you ever kiss a girl?" He said, "If you keep it a secret, I will tell you. I did kiss a girl once." The rabbi said, "It beats eating pork, doesn't it?" Those are the kind of stories you can tell about religions that doesn't get anybody into trouble. Well, the title of this telecast, you remember, is about holding us together, because we're living in an entirely different age. Our new task is quite different. The new task is how to prevent ourselves from going to pieces. In other words, that ever since we split the atom, people are split. Races, nationalities, social groups. It seems as if almost all the rivets have fallen apart in the skyscraper of our civilization. Years ago, Conrad, the novelist, wrote a story about a ship in a river in Africa. The Captain Marlowe was pacing up and down the deck of this small ship. He was waiting for repairs. Along the shore, he could see the native Africans dancing, singing, mocking him. And as Marlowe paced the deck, he said, "Rivets, by heavens. That's what I need. Up there at the station on the hill, boxes of them piled open. Said you kick them as you walk along. They roll down the siding. And here I don't have a single rivet to put my plates together." And this was the contrast between these carefree people and a technical civilization that was all at loss for progress because there were no rivets. Now that's what's making us fall apart. The absence of some unifying principle. Just let me give you now some examples of how we're falling apart. I will take education and literature and maybe philosophy and a few other things. First of all, take education. It used to be centuries ago that there were universities. Now, the word university means something that turns about one thing. And what was that one thing? Well, in the Middle Ages, it was theology. All sciences were, as it were, in relation to that. Then later on, it became philosophy. Another university? The microbic content of cotton undershirts. What a wonderful thesis that was. PhD. But I think the prize was one of our well-known Eastern universities. A psychological study of the post-rotational eye movement of squabs. Then take the press. Rivets falling apart. And TV, even. Here, for example, on TV, suppose I were a news commentator. I would show you, for example, here is a clip that has just come to us this afternoon from Vietnam. The shows a bomb dropping on one of the cities of Vietnam in which 10,000 people were killed. More details of this horrible massacre will be unfolded to you after this brief announcement. The White Knight will clean your dishes. Think what becomes of us. It means that both are meaningless. When we can shift so quickly from a story of horror and death to this insignificant detail about soap. Then the press is interested in getting your opinion and yours, everybody's opinion. Not because of the opinion itself, but to set it in contrast with someone else's opinion. So as long as there's conflict, there's news. What's the purpose of opinions? Are we trying to develop a meaning and a philosophy of life? And this has so much affected personalities that today many minds have no unifying pattern of life. They read one book, maybe a bestseller, and they say, oh, this is a great idea. And they lay down the railroad tracks on which they will move. Then next week they read another book and they tear up those tracks. They were a materialist last week. Now this week they begin to be an idealist. And as life goes on, they never have one goal or one purpose. No rivets in life. Now this is serious. If this were a class in school, in a university, I would go more into detail, but just let me go through famous writers and thinkers and give you their concept of this rivetless civilization. 200 years ago, de Tocqueville, who wrote a great deal about America and who foresaw America, said Americans are going to be superficial. They'll be interested in the surface of things and will not get down to depths. Then if you take those who have made a study of Grecian democracy, what made it fail, the Middle Ages, what made it fail, our contemporary civilization, you get always the same answer. There was nothing to hold civilization together. For example, Jaeger. Those of you who are in the university probably have read Jaeger. Work on Padaia, which Jaeger shows that the Greek democracy of the pre-Christian times went to pieces just as soon as it lost its gods, its faith, and its myths. Collingwood wrote about the Middle Ages. Collingwood said that the Middle Ages went to pieces just as soon as it lost its faith. Politics and economics, he said, began to be independent of theology and morals and ethics. Philosophy was separated from theology, and the unity of civilization decayed. In our modern times, Reinhold Niebuhr compares our civilization to Babel, in which he says men are confused. Each one is trying to make himself a god, and finally try to eventually to reach the heavens and the attempt fails. And Toynbee wrote 10 volumes called A Study of History. And he says that our age is suffering from a schism of soul. That is to say, we've lost all of our unity, and we're like the pyramid builders. What, he said, was Egypt trying to do when it built the pyramids? It was trying to forget the slavery of people. And so upon all of that forced labor was erected this monument to resist decay, and it became the very basis of decay itself. I wonder if going to the moon, $77 billion a year in preparation for war, is not another Babel. Is it not based not upon slavery, but upon a neglect of the poor? May it not end as Egyptian civilization ended? These are the questions which thinkers are asking. I've just tried to put it simply in terms of rivets, which hold the plates of our economics and politics and education and everything else together. Now, there's a danger, a grave danger in our civilization. Today, the catchword is freedom. Someday we'll explain the three ways in which freedom can be understood. But freedom today is interpreted as license, as freedom from law, not freedom for something. When you have a culture fissioned, split up, divided, and minds without any goals, you have chaos, which is becoming more and more apparent in civilization. What is the danger? The danger is that there may come along someone who will attempt to get us out of this chaos by creating some kind of maybe totalitarian state. In other words, a dictatorship arises in order to organize the chaos that was created by too much freedom. As a Russian writer put it, who had been through the communist revolution, and if you keep these words in mind, they may help to interpret future civilization. Unlimited freedom leads to unlimited tyranny. Communism was only an organization, forcible organization of a chaos. When shepherds cannot get their sheep to follow them, they send dogs after them. We're in danger of having dogs run after us to organize us out of this chaos. As Dostoevsky, the French novelist, put it, he said, I wouldn't be at all surprised that there might arise out of our cities in some future day someone unlearned would say, let's knock to pieces all of this supposed wisdom. Let us smash all of our logarithms to pieces. Let us go our own way. And you'll be surprised how many followers we will have. I know it's not a pleasant picture, but I'm just trying to keep up in what's happening in the world. And not just to be a part of this rivetless culture. Now, what will hold us together? Knowledge? No, not knowledge alone. We have indeed eaten of the tree of knowledge. The knowledge of good and evil. We've picked off the fruit, then now we're eating the leaves. And knowledge anyway, when it's about things above, always demands that we break up those noble things to fit our poor intelligences. What can unify civilization? Love. Oh, yes, but how that word is misused. The Greeks had four words for love. Four. Believe me, when we say the Greeks had a word for it, they did. Someday I may give a telecast on those four words. But today, we have only one word for love. Certainly we can call in an absolutely unprejudiced witness in the novelist Faulkner. Let me read you what he says. In other words, this is not the kind of love that will save us, the kind that he is describing, and which, incidentally, he repudiates. He says, love if you will, because it can't last. There's no place for it in the world today. We have eliminated it. That is, eliminated the true love. It took us a long time. But man is resourceful. So we got rid of love at last. Just as we got rid of Christ. If Venus returned today, or if Jesus returned today, we would crucify him quick in our defense. If Venus returned, she would be a soiled man in a subway lavatory with a palm full of dirty French postcards. That's what's happened to our concept of love, noble love, as it has degenerated into eroticism. But love is still the answer. What kind of love? What's the rivet that will hold us together? Oh, I forgot to signal my angel. It's not his fault. It's three. We have mysterious winks. I do things like this. You'll always notice them. This means that you wash off the blackboard. This means that you don't wash. Have you ever noticed me doing those things? No? Well, what is the kind of love that will save us? Put rivets into our civilization. Three things. First of all, the only thing we can ever love is a person. We just simply cannot fall in love with the theorem of geometry. Or a syllogism. Or an abstraction. Even virtue itself is unappealing until virtue begins to be seen in a person. Why is it, for example, that today conversions take place more in the middle classes and upper classes than they do down below? Slums and inner city and among the poor. It's because the people in the upper classes can read, they can study, they can make comparisons, they know something about psychology and metaphysics, and they come to a concept of truth. But the people below, they're not doing any reading. The only way they know about it is the way that the people live. And unless they can see that the man of religion there is a little bit different from the rest of them, unless they can see that his love
is of an entirely different character than the love that they know, even the best of them. And religion will never make any appeal. Secondly, love must be a person. Secondly, that person must have suffered defeat. That is important. Why? Why must the person have suffered defeat that we love? Because we're defeated. That's why. Because we're frustrated. Believe me, we are not looking for heroes. What we fear not so much, what we fear actually is not death. What we fear is defeat. Death only touches our existence. Defeat touches our personality. And if we're ever to put love, ever to put rivets into civilization, we have to find some person who's gone down to defeat, and in that defeat has become victorious. And there's only one man that's ever done that. And even if he were wrong, which he's not, I would rather be wrong with him than right with the other.